How to imagine the worst possible use for your product and then stop it from happening. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. Slack rolled out a new feature this week to let people connect with anyone, even if they don't work in the same company. One flaw became immediately obvious. Anyone with your email address could send you a connection invite and a message that could be harassing or harmful. Slack promptly changed the feature. Invites no longer contain customized messages. But it made us wonder, how can companies do a better job anticipating how features could be harmful and fix them before they get rolled out? It's a topic for Quality Assurance, where we take a second look at a big tech story. Sarah Kunst is a venture capitalist with Clio Capital.
Companies need diverse and robust kind of trust and safety teams to help think through these issues, to help say, what are vectors of abuse and how do we proactively think about lessening those risks, particularly on a platform like Slack, where you actually can't block people. The question for Slack in the larger tech world is, how do you think about these things before you roll them out? And so that thoughtfulness, building with empathy, is something that the entire industry really needs to take more seriously.
Right. And that's why I wanted to talk to you specifically, because you are, you know, empowering entrepreneurs to build businesses. And I wonder how you start to build in to the process of creating a company, empathy, or even just planning for the worst possible usage of your product.
Yeah, well, luckily, as my therapist would tell you, I am a very good catastrophic thinker. It's one of those things where you have to be your own risk manager and say, what is the absolute worst outcome that could happen here? How could this be hurtful? How could this be misused? How could this be abused? And so some of it is baking, you know, just empathy into your product team, into your engineering team, into your sales team to think about these things and saying what works and what doesn't, and really talking to people to understand their experiences and where things have gone wrong and then go from there.
Do you think every company needs to understand at this point, almost no matter what it's doing, but particularly if it's connecting people in any way, does every company need to realize that everything is content moderation?
Yes. I mean, everything is content moderation, right? How we speak to each other. And if you've ever been at a bar close to closing time and somebody mouths off to a waitress and gets kicked out by a bouncer, that is IRL content moderation. The world is full of content moderation, right? You can't say bomb on a plane. You know, it is not a freedom of speech issue, right? Freedom of speech means the government can't arrest you for stating your opinion. It doesn't mean that Slack has to allow you to massively spam or harass, you know, tons of people every day.
You know, if companies make this part of their planning process and VCs make this part of their due diligence, what is going to happen when the worst case scenario planning includes, in order to avoid the worst case scenario, we're going to have to make less money?
You know, I don't know if I believe that there's always that trade-off. You know, it's kind of like climate change, right? We think it's so expensive to decarbonize. It's so expensive to divest. It's so expensive to switch to electric cars, whatever. Look at the long-term cost. And so I think that the challenge here for companies and investors is not to say, hey, is it going to be expensive tomorrow? It's saying, hey, can we afford not to do this 5 years out, 10 years out? What does this mean for our platform long term? And for the most part, I don't think it's that companies can't afford to do this. I think it's that they can't afford not to.
There is, of course, a question of representation and your ability to do worst case scenario planning when you don't have a team that has ever experienced a worst case scenario. And this seems to be just yet another example of how important that is.
Yeah. And, you know, I haven't looked at their latest diversity stats. I think that Slack has a relatively diverse team, but overall, the question is, are the people doing your worst case scenario planning people who understand, you know, the specific threat vectors, right? A story I always like to tell is, you know, as a Black woman, I had a sunburn once. I was like in my early 20s, never had one before. I thought I was getting poisoned. It's a little tiny case of sun poisoning. I had no idea what it felt like. I couldn't imagine every time I saw friends get sunburnt that it actually hurt because they did it all the time, right? And so literally that one experience like 12 years ago now has completely changed the way that I think about anytime I see somebody getting red, I'm like, you need some sunscreen, right? Because, and it's not that I don't have empathy and it's not that I don't care about skincare. I just hadn't experienced it. And so, you know, when you're building these teams, when you're building product teams, when you're doing strategy, when you're putting it through a trust and safety review, are the people on your teams the people who are most likely to have experienced the downsides of issues, right? And so really baking empathy into your team and making sure that you have people around the table from a huge variety of experiences who can help you understand that, like, yes, sunburns really hurt, right, is so important. And I think this is a great example of it, but it's also a call to the wider tech industry to say, if a company that's historically tried pretty hard to do the right things, able to have blind spots like this, then you have to assume your company does too. How do you proactively guard against them?
Sarah Kunst is the managing director at Clio Capital. And now for some related links. Speaking of anticipating problems or trying to clean up messes after the fact, the CEOs of Facebook, Google, and Twitter were on Capitol Hill yesterday for a hearing on disinformation and hate speech, in a little Section 230, of course. And while, on the one hand, these hearings are starting to feel like Groundhog Day, lawmakers posturing and bringing up pet peeves and seeming like they don't understand and somehow still expecting that if they shout yes or no enough times at the CEOs, they'll all of a sudden snap to and change everything about their content moderation strategies, I still don't want to be nihilistic here. I mean, all of the above is kind of true. But with each passing hearing, lawmakers seem to hone in just a little more on the issues at stake here. The business model of engagement, the misinformation loophole that advertising can represent, and crucially, the algorithms that amplify misinformation and content, giving them more reach and more power to radicalize and confuse and misinform. And if I'm being honest, the solutions really aren't easy. They're easier than these CEOs make it seem, that is true, but hard and fast rules about speech are problematic and will harm people they're not intended to harm. They always have. But that said, I think we now know enough to act. Like, maybe let's have some rules about the thing where Facebook is apparently auto-generating pages for militia organizations. That's according to a report this month from the Tech Transparency Project. Facebook's algorithms are also continuing to recommend militia groups and other extreme content. Seems like maybe there could be a rule about that. Requiring transparency about how and why some content is promoted, that's an option. Or an actual federal privacy law that prescribes how ads could be targeted or how people could opt out of targeting. Or antitrust laws that make it so two companies alone don't control the entire digital advertising ecosystem. Literally anything that isn't just Mark Zuckerberg continuing to be incapable of a normal answer to a question, or lawmakers continuing to offensively mispronounce Sundar Pichai's name, and Jack Dorsey just continuing to insist he's thinking about things when he clearly is not, like, actually even present. He is visibly floating in an astral plane in the place he would rather be. Come on, we can all see it. Anything but that again, I beg you. Jesus Alvarado, Stephanie Hughes, and Michael Lipkin produced the show. Our engineers are Robin Edgar and Becca Weinman. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.